Welcome to the Hackberry House of Chosun. My name is Bob, and reading today from The Scarlet Threads. We're in Book 3, getting towards the end of that section. We've been talking about things that are going on in America, in the Western world now, where the Roman system, which is, I believe, a part of that whole Babylonian system, is now making its inroads into the West. And the Pope is very upset because of all the things that are happening here. Good and bad things are happening for his little kingdom, his big kingdom. Things are far from calm in America. Please keep the words of the Pope in mind, where he said, "Venerable brethren, you see clearly enough how sad and full of perils is the condition of Catholics in the world." Keep that in mind as we talk of that period of American history immediately following the Civil War. Is it plausible that a monarch, and the Pope is a monarch, so opposed to American ways and opposed to American interference to his global plans, is it plausible that he might try to do something to end that government? I'm speaking of our government, America. Of course, in the final analysis, it doesn't matter who starts something in Rome's eyes. Recall that Babylon is pictured as riding a beast, not necessarily summoning the beast to his various tasks, just riding him. Whenever she finds a strong back to support her, she'll hop on. So, do plots, conspiracies, actions, subtly performed through another's influence, do they exist? Is there a reader or listener still so naive as to deny the possibility of people making sinister plans? Throughout the ensuing compiling of evidence, keep in mind that my investigation contains many question marks, but the facts are there too. For example, you'll find in the Congressional Record, 1916, April 25, to be exact, that one Senator Owen inserted in full a copy of the secret treaty of Verona. What's that? Well, the subject on the floor that day was women's suffrage, the right of a woman to vote. The senator on this day suggests that the basis of such suffrage is representative government and the sovereignty of the people. These are well-known American ideals, if they were. The treaty, written only 40 years before our Civil War, shows the philosophy governing the powers who could easily have been interested in subverting American democracy. Here's that entry. I want to read it for you. The Secret Treaty of Verona. Quote, "The undersigned, especially authorized to make some additions to the Treaty of the Holy Alliance, after having exchanged their respective credentials, have agreed as follows." And I will tell you who the undersigned are later. Article 1. "The high contracting powers, being convinced that the system of representative government, like as in America, is equally as incompatible with the monarchical principles as the maxim of the sovereignty of the people with the divine right, we do engage mutually in the most solemn manner to use all their efforts to put an end to the system of representative governments in whatever country it may exist in Europe, and to prevent its being introduced in those countries where it is not yet known." That's Article 1. Article 2. "As it cannot be doubted that the liberty of the press is the most powerful means used by the pretended supporters of the rights of nations to the detriment of those of princes, the high contracting parties promise reciprocally to adopt all proper measures to suppress it," freedom of the press. not only in their own states, but also in the rest of Europe. Article 3. Convinced that the principles of religion contribute most powerfully to keep nations in the state of passive obedience which they owe to their princes, the high contracting parties declare it to be their intention to sustain in their respective states those measures which the clergy may adopt with the aim of ameliorating their own interests, so intimately connected with the preservation of the authority of the princes. And the contracting powers join in offering their thanks to the Pope for what he has already done for them, and solicit his constant cooperation in their views of submitting the nations. Article 4. The situation of Spain and Portugal unite, unhappily, all the circumstances to which this treaty has particular reference. The high contracting parties, in confiding to France the care of putting an end to them, these problems, engaged to assist her in the manner which may the least compromise them with their own people and the people of France, by means of a subsidy on the part of the two empires of 20,000 francs every year from the date of the signature of this treaty to the end of the war. Article 5. In order to establish in the peninsula the order of things which existed before the revolution of Cadiz, and to ensure the entire execution of the articles of the present treaty, the high contracting parties give to each other the reciprocal assurance that as long as their views are not fulfilled, rejecting all other ideas of utility or other measure to be taken, they will address themselves with the shortest possible delay to all the authorities existing in their states and to all their agents in foreign countries, with a view to establish connections tending toward the accomplishments of the objects proposed by this treaty. We're going to do everything we possibly can to stop representative government and to hold on to monarchical. Monarchs, kings, rulers, not government of and by and for the people. Article 6. This treaty shall be renewed with such changes as new circumstances may give occasion for, either at a new Congress or at the court of one of the contracting parties, as soon as the war with Spain shall be terminated. Article 7. The present treaty shall be ratified, and the ratification exchanged at Paris within the space of 6 months. Made at Verona, the 22nd of November, 1822. Who were these high contracting parties? Well, they were Austria, France, Prussia, part of Germany, and Russia. Now remember, that's 1822. That's, you know, years before the first dates we decided to talk about this time, before the Civil War and all of that. But this is in effect. This is what's going on in Europe. This is what they want. Interesting reading, don't you think? Here's an excerpt from Mirari Vos, an encyclical of Pope Gregory XVI, 10 years later, 1832. That absurd and erroneous opinion, or better, that product of delirium, that it is necessary to extend and guarantee liberty of conscience to everyone, the path to this most pestilent error is being prepared by the full and unlimited freedom of opinions, which is being widely diffused, to the misfortune of religion and civil society, while some keep saying with extreme impudence that religion will derive some advantage from it. Experience has proved from earliest times that states distinguished for wealth, for power, for glory, have perished from this single evil, unrestrained freedom of thought, freedom of speech, and the love of novelties. To this is related that deadly freedom, never adequately to be execrated and detested, the liberty of the press, end of quote. I have to say again, he's got something there. There is truth in what he said if the wrong people are in charge. In most of our history, the better people, the better ideas have been in charge. The people have had freedom in mind because they had experienced such bondage before. But if bad people do get in charge, bad people are in charge of the press, in charge of the internet. You see where I'm going. It can be like he said. But we were speaking of plots. In the case of one Abraham Lincoln, for example, a quick trip to Chicago's Museum of Science and Industry will expose one to a newspaper clipping. It used to be there. I'm not sure it's still there, but I found it there many years ago. It was dated April 15, 1864, the day after Lincoln's assassination, describing how already, one day later, people were talking about a plot. Now, history either happens or it is planned. In the case of Lincoln, no serious investigator rules out a conspiracy. There are many variations on the theme, but a conspiracy did take place. For what reasons and by whom, I'll leave with you after I've shared a few lesser-known facts. Did you realize that on the same night that Lincoln was shot, Secretary of State Seward was likewise attacked while on his sickbed? Others like General Grant had been targeted too. These are matters of commonly known but not often reported history. There's no secret here. The complete overthrow of the United States government was on the agenda. Think 9/11. Think that field in Pennsylvania where one aircraft was grounded and was not allowed to finish the job that had been begun in New York, a job that was including Washington, D.C., to complete overthrow of the United States government was on the agenda. I wrote that 20-some years ago, and it's still happening, people wanting to take over this nation. And who was involved in this comprehensive plan to overthrow the government? Surely you recognize the name John Wilkes Booth. Most know he was an actor. He spoke some dramatic words and pulled the trigger. Yes, those words were in Latin, but we'll jump to no conclusions yet. A much smaller group of Americans, and I mean much smaller, maybe no one that I'm listening to right now, America or throughout the world, have heard the name Surratt. A few may have heard of Mary Surratt, and fewer still, though, know of her son John. Mary's name can still be found in a couple of encyclopedias. John's, I could not find. I had to read a separate book for this. Mary Surratt was a well-known lady of her day. We'll say for now that it's only incidental she was a Roman Catholic. Her home was frequented by quite a mix of people, including Catholic priests and others implicated in the assassination plot, such as John Wilkes Booth. After Lincoln's death, the evidence brought against her and other conspirators was so convincing that all were hung. Did you know that? After the fact, it's fair to say that many felt the trials were rushed, and that the evidence for Mrs. Surratt's guilty sentence was not strong enough. Miscarriages of justice do occur. I'm trying to be fair here, but I'm not done. A Roman Catholic was involved in killing the president. If it's a fact, it's still not terribly conclusive by itself. To my mind, the intriguing thing about that horrid evening is the presence, flight, and especially the route of her son, John. Oh, it's an out-of-print book now by Burke McCarty. It's called The Suppressed Truth About the Assassination of Abraham Lincoln. In that book, John Surratt is named as the mastermind of the whole event. And once more, to be fair to subsequent discoveries, Witnesses at John's trial, much later, quote, prove he was in Elmira, New York, on the night of the assassination. Other witnesses swear they saw him outside the theater where Lincoln was shot. But of his flight route, there is no question. And the reason for his flight? Though some say he is not guilty, it is maintained that he fled because of his association with John Wilkes Booth. It was a very real association, I might add. All witnesses and evidence can trace John's flight first to Canada, then to England, in both of which cases he's housed by Catholic clergy. And then, lo and behold, John turns up in Vatican City, where he is personally received by the Pope. These are facts. Shortly thereafter, we see him dressed in papal costume, a part of the Pope's military operations, a light infantry corps known as the Zouaves. All of that is traceable fact. The United States, after a long and costly, not to mention contested, delay, finally requests that the Vatican release Surratt. An outward compliance is immediate, but wouldn't you know it? He escapes from the ones who are bringing him on one leg of his journey home. But later he is caught and brought to trial. Now, I've run out of time and space here. I've got to let it go again. Let me look at my schedule for today. Well, I lost that too. I'm telling you, you don't want to get old. But anyway, okay, I wasn't going to quite go this far today, so I'm going to stop right here. Thank you so much for being here. We're going to talk about the trial and the follow-up on the trial and the route and a few other things that happened during that event. This is not an open and shut case. This has something to do with Babylon. This has something to do with a world power that wants to remain a world power, but is being thwarted on every hand because God is not ready for that back in the 1800s. He may be ready now to allow evil to flourish. We don't know. Oh, be ready, Christian. Be ready for when that time comes. It won't be pretty. But we can know that soon after that, Jesus will be back. So hang in there. Thank you so much for being here today. Let's do this again. This is the Hackberry House of Chosun, Lord willing. We'll talk again real soon. Bye-bye.